ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Text 34. We'll start with the word by word.
Yasmin Hari Bhagavan Ijyamanaha Ijyatma Murti Yajatman Sham Tanuti Kaman Amogan Stira Jangamanam Antaha Vahi Vayu Eva Ejha Atma.
Yasmin Hari Bhagavan Nijmana Ijatma Murti Ijatam Shamtanuti Kamanamogan Stira Jangamaninam Antar Bahir Vayur Ivaisha Atma Yasmin Hari Bhagavan Ijamana Ijatma Murtir Jajatam Shamatonoti Kamanamogan Stira Jangamanam Hanta Bahir Vayuri Vaisya Atma Yasmin Hari Bhagavan Ijyamana Ijatma Murtir Yashatam Shamtanuti Kamanamogan Stira Jangamanam Antar Bahir Vayuri Vaisya Atma.
Please chant.
Yatma Murti Ajatam Samuti Kamanamogan Stira Jangamanam Anta Bahir Vayu Ivaisya Atma. Yasman Narin Bhagavan Ayramanam Ijatma Murti Ijajatam Samoti Kamanamogan Stira Jangamanam Antha Bahir Vayuri Vaisya Atmam.
Ladies,
Yasmin Nari Bhagavan Ijamana Ijatma Murti Yashatam Samaroti. Pahi Vaya Ivaisha Atma.
No one else? None of the ladies? No? Any more men?
Yasmin Harir Bhagavan Ijamana. Ijatma Murti Ijashatam Shamtanoti. Kamanamogansthira Jangamanam. Anta Bahir Vayur Ivaisya Atma.
Anyone else? Huh? Okay.
Synonyms.
Yasmin.
In such sacrificial ceremonies. Hari. The Supreme Lord. Bhagavan. The Personality of Godhead. Ijamanaha, worshipped.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed the word being.
Being worshipped. Ija Atma, the soul of all worshipable deities. Murti, in the forms. Yajatma. Again, yajatam, those who worship, sham, welfare, tanoti, spreads, kaman, desires, amogan, inviolable, stira jangamanam, of all the moving and non-moving, antaha, within, vahi, outside, vayu, air, iva, like, eshaha, of all of them, atma, spirit soul. Translation, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. In all sacrificial ceremonies, although sometimes a demigod is worshipped, the Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead is worshipped because He is the Supersoul of everyone and exists both inside and outside like the air. Thus, it is He only who awards all welfare to the worshipper. Please follow after me. In all sacrificial ceremonies, although sometimes a demigod is worshipped, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is worshipped because He is the Supersoul of everyone and exists both inside and outside like the air. Thus it is He only who awards all welfare to the worshipper. Excuse me. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is even sometimes seen that demigods like Indra and Chandra are worshipped and offered sacrificial awards. Yet the rewards of all such sacrifices are awarded to the worshipper by the Supreme Lord. And it is the Lord only who can offer all welfare to the worshipper. I'll comment on these. But let me finish the purport first, though. The demigods, although worshipped, cannot do anything without the sanction of the Lord, because the Lord is the Supersoul of everyone. That means over and above everyone, both moving and non-moving. In Bhagavad Gita 9.23, the Lord Himself confirms this in the following shloka. Ye pyanya divata bhakta yajante shradayanvita te pimam eva kuntiya yajantya vidhi purvakam. Which means, whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, we all know who Kunti is. You go like this or like this. Everybody knows who Kunti is, right? Yeah? Sure. Who's Kunti? What is her position? What is her relationship? Go ahead.
I can't hear. The mother of what?
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, so Kunti is the mother of the Pandavas. But not five Pandavas. Three of them. Okay? Who's the mother of the other two Pandavas? What is it? Madri, yes, thank you so much. So, now, whatever a man may, this is the meaning, whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone. But it is offered without true understanding. This is going on all over the world. People think that the demigods, they have self-autonomy, that they can do pretty much whatever they want to do. But this is considered offensive. We every morning there are, the second offense to the Lord is to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the names of Lord Vishnu. So that's an offense. We need to understand that everything comes under the direction, the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is above him. No one is greater than him. No one is equal to him. And therefore, he must be looked up to as supreme and independent. And none of the other demigods can be considered as operating or acting independently. Cannot be done, is not done. Getting back to the purport. And it is the Lord... I just changed my pages, so please forgive me. Yes. The fact is that the Supreme Lord is one without a second. There is no God other than the Supreme Lord himself. Thus, the Supreme Lord is eternally transcendental to the material creation. To be transcendental to it means to be above it. To be unaffected by it. To be undisturbed by it. And why? The word transcendental means he's in a different plane of consciousness. The consciousness of pure spirit. Therefore, he can't be affected, can't be touched. The modes of nature can do nothing to him. Sometimes he may play act, an act that he is affected. And there are a number of pastimes in which he does that. But Srila Prabhupada always explains that this is nothing more than play acting, because he wants people to think that he is a human being. But of course, those who are devotees understand when he is play acting and when he is not. For example, when he's fighting with his little boyfriends, okay, and he loses the fight, so he has to put the boyfriends on his shoulders. He who's holding up the whole universe, created the whole universe, he can't defeat a little five-year-old boy. Does that make sense? But he likes the play. It's fun. It's enjoyable. And he's very much into it. Especially in Goloka Vrindavan. But there are many who worship the demigods like the sun, the moon, and Indra, who are only material representatives of the Supreme Lord. These demigods are indirect qualitative representations of the Supreme Lord. Again, these demigods are indirect qualitative representations of the Supreme Lord. So they bear some of the power, some of the greatness, which he himself, the Supreme Lord, gives them, bestows upon them. And if they remember that,
then they act in their positions in a very useful, very beneficial, and helpful way. But if they don't remember that and they begin to think they are all in all, that they are independent, they can do what they want, problems arise. And I'll get into that in just a few moments. I would like to finish the purport first, though. A learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. Therefore, he directly worships the Supreme Lord and is not diverted by the material, qualitative representations. Those who are not so learned worship such qualitative, material representations. But their worship is unceremonious because it is irregular. They have the wrong understanding. That's basically what is meant. So I'd like to start from the purport. Generally, I like to comment as I'm going along, but some devotees mentioned they'd like to hear the whole purport first, so I'm trying to accede to their request, so forgive me if I sound repetitious. Yes, as the first sentence of the purport mentions, it's sometimes seen that the demigods like Indra and Chandra, we all know who Indra and Chandra are. If you do not know, raise your hand. Everybody knows, right? Okay, great. Okay, who's Indra? What is his position? He's a what? King Ab. What else does he do? Yes, wonderful, exactly. And what about Chandra? How about on this side of the room? He's the what? Yeah, he's the moon god. Yeah, okay. And our worship, and the reason I'm asking this is because I went through many years of classes in which speakers never defined what these words meant. And I was too lazy to look them up myself. So I don't want that to happen to anyone. It's amazing how many things I learned in the last 5 years, which I should have learned 40 years ago. But that's just the way it went. So, feeling sorry for everybody else here, I want to make sure that everybody understands all the words here. It's really important for the understanding of the purport. Chandra, it is even sometimes seen that demigods like Indra and Chandra are worshipped and offered sacrificial awards. Yet the rewards of all such sacrifices are awarded to the worshipper by the Supreme Lord. And it is the Lord only who can offer all welfare to the worshiper. Because many people, especially in India, you'll find that people worship not only in India, but even in the United States where there are Hindu temples, you'll find murtis of Durga and Ganesha and Shiva and a number of these different, which are not the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, people worship them as if they were the Supreme Lord. And this is what Srila Prabhupada is battering over and over again. And he's saying, even in this one purport, they are not the Supreme Lord. And they should not be seen as independent of the Supreme Lord. They are dependent upon the Supreme Lord. And they can do nothing without the approval, without the sanction, without the okay of the Supreme Lord. Sometimes it may be that the Supreme Lord gives them some automatic approval and says, you don't have to ask me about this because this is what I want. And therefore, somebody comes and asks for certain things, and the demigod may give it immediately because Krishna has already given the approval for something. This can happen in any managerial situation. But basically, essentially, the rule is Krishna has to approve it. And it is the Lord only who can offer all welfare to the worshipper. Yeah. The demigods, although worshipped, cannot do anything without the sanction of the Lord. Because the Lord is the super soul of everyone. That means he's all powerful. No one is above him. No one is greater than him. No one is equal to him. He is all in all. Unlike the demigods. They are not all in all. They are as all as the Lord allows them to be. If they, Indra, for example, he can create the rain. Not because he went to some school to learn how to make rain. He didn't do that. The only school he went to is the school of worship, of devotion, of love and dedication. And Krishna says, yes, okay,
You've earned it. You've won it. Now I give you the secret how to make rain. Okay? But Krishna can take that away. He can also reduce him to just an ordinary human being. And Indra has had those unfortunate circumstances occur. So he cannot do anything. And this is so important for all of us. Every moment, for example, we're sitting here. The ceiling is not falling down. It's not falling down because Krishna is keeping it up. But in some other place in the world, a ceiling is falling down. And other places of the world, you'll find that there are mountains falling down. And other places of the world, you'll find that there are big waves going up 30, 40, 50 feet in the air and coming down, smashing people. So this is all the doing of Krishna. Some people are getting pleasing or pleasurable sensations as a result of the good things that they have done, or as a result, of course, of what Krishna wants to give the devotees so that they can go on with their devotional service. I mean, if you get knocked down, you know, on the head by that ceiling, it's going to be difficult to chant your rounds the next day. You might have a concussion or something like that. But if we take these things for granted, that may happen. And Krishna doesn't want us to take anything for granted. He wants us to always remember what Prabhupada is telling us here, that Krishna is the one who is responsible for all of our well-being, for all the good things that are happening to us, and also the bad things that are happening. He punishes us, and he also embraces us. He does both according to the need, according to what we have earned. So, therefore, we must keep always Krishna in the center of our life. We walk across the street and we don't get hit by a car. That's Krishna's mercy. Somebody else in another part of the city walks across the street and he's looking both ways, but somehow or other his mind goes into a drift and he gets bumped by a car. Krishna's mercy. How could it be mercy? Well, he's just learned that be good, be careful, be kind, be moral, be understanding, be loving. And that's not going to happen to you because that's your punishment for what you did 3 weeks ago. So Krishna, he gives that. And what happens, I know in my own personal experience, as the more pain that Krishna gave me, that was the greatest of my gurus. I never forgot the pains. And the more excruciating, the more memorable. I'm serious. I can remember all the excruciating pains. There weren't that many. But let me tell you, they were not forgettable at all. And so they told me, don't do this, because if you do, you're going to get it again. So, and that's actually good, because we act in a very restrictive, self-controlled manner and don't do things just whimsically, independently, carelessly or thoughtlessly, but we do them with thought, with feeling, with understanding that we are acting as the servants of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the servant of our spiritual master who is serving the Supreme Lord. So when we understand that, then we tiptoe. We don't just run into something like a wild person. Tiptoeing means being careful and being very arrogant and thinking that nothing can bother me, nothing can hurt me, nothing can disturb me, because never does, until finally Krishna says, this person, he is too sure of himself. And because he's so sure, because he thinks he's a Lord, and because he thinks he's a Lord, I will show him who the real Lord is. We'll get to that in just a moment. A very good example in our scriptures. So, in Bhagavad Gita 9:23, the Lord himself confirms this in the following shloka. I'll just do the English on that. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone. Why is it meant for Krishna alone? Anybody want to raise their hand and say it's why it's meant for Krishna alone? Any ladies? No? Yes, go ahead. And say loud. Come on. We don't have the mic, so I'm going to convey it. Go ahead. He's the source of everything. Yeah, what'd you say? Yes, we got that. Everything what? Everything, yes. Everything is in his position. He owns everything.
nobody can take anything away from him unless he wants to allow it to be taken away. He is in control, as we call him, the supreme controller. And therefore, for that reason, it is offered, as it says, whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone. Because, as you just said, he's the owner. He's the knower. He's the controller. And therefore, everything should go to him. And then if he wants, for example, food, you prepare the food and make it as nice as possibly can. And then we cover it, offer it to the Lord, and say some prayers to the Lord as we do. And we beg the Lord to please kindly accept this offering. We should not assume that he's going to accept it. If it's not offered, as Krishna said, with love and devotion, as he says, whatever one offers with me in love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. But if you take out the love and devotion, he's not saying that he's going to accept it. He may acknowledge that you've done that, but love and he doesn't need food. Krishna has all the food that he needs, and then some. But he doesn't have all the love and devotion that he can get from the whole world, all of his children. So he wants us to offer that foodstuff with love and devotion. Love means I want you to enjoy it. I want you to have it. I want you to be pleased by it. I want you to taste every little morsel and be uplifted by it. In other words, the devotee wants the best for the Lord. Not he does assumes that, well, he's God, you know, he'll taste it and everything will be... No, he has this sense of love. This is my offering to you, and I want you to enjoy it. I want you to be pleased by it. I want you to be satisfied with it. And if you're not satisfied, tell me why, so that I can be enabled to and help you become satisfied. I want to do it right as you want me to do it. So if we have, and he can give that guidance. He can tell you what you should do, what's missing. You didn't put enough salt in, or you didn't put enough sugar in. He can tell you from within. If you ask in a very humble and a very sacrificial, very lowly fashion. And that's the way, actually, at least in the initial stages, Krishna wants to be, he wants us to give everything with love and devotion. And if we do that, then what will happen is that he will be pleased more and more and more. Krishna says that he cannot repay the love of the gopis or Radharani. Why is that? Because their love is so intense, it's so constant, it's so steady, and it's so unconditional, and it's so undemanding. It's that and even many more qualities. So with those qualities, he's purchased. Nobody can purchase Krishna with the billions and trillions of... because he's the owner. He's the most wealthy. So nobody can purchase... But with pure love, as he gets from the gopas and the gopis, he's purchased with that love and feels in his heart of hearts and says it in his mouth, with his mouth, I can never repay this offering that you have given to me. You will just have to be satisfied with your own humble activities, your own devotional activities. Of course, through those devotional activities, he, sitting in the heart of all of these persons, he causes, enables these devotees to feel an intensity of bliss and peace and strength and love and all of these wonderful qualities. And as a result, the devotees are so filled with happiness and bliss and satisfaction and fulfillment. This is all for us, either now or in the future. But he's saying that it's too much for me to repay. So what does he give? He gives himself. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, and the reward is himself. And what does that mean, himself? It means his qualities, his goodness, his sweetness, his love, his affection, his dedication, his strength, his guidance, his knowledge. This is all of Krishna, and he leaks it into our heart, and we then suddenly find ourselves knowing certain things that we did not know yesterday.
or feeling certain feelings that we did not have yesterday. This is the mercy of Krishna. And that mercy, as I said just a few moments ago, it cannot be purchased. But it can be had by having the association of pure souls like Srila Prabhupada. And that's why everyone, like moths, was attracted to his guiding light. And we are all ready to sacrifice our life just the way a moth goes into the light and gets killed. The devotees, they never considered getting killed. They considered getting alive. Yeah, when you give yourself to Krishna, when you give yourself to the Supreme Lord, you don't lose anything. We gain something. And in gaining that something, what happens is that we benefit. And when we benefit and we feel uplifted, we feel strengthened, we feel blissful and joyful, we want to share that with others. That's a natural feeling. And in sharing it with others, people see that, well, you're such a nice person, such a friendly person, such a good person. And he or she wants to do something nice back to you. Because you've given them something to feel the same kind of obligation that I can never repay you. So when you give something unconditionally, undemandingly, without any strings attached to it, without any false motivations, Krishna is very, very happy. And because that is pure loving relationships. Most of the relationships in the material world, unfortunately, even between husbands and wives, are of a conditional, demanding, motivational manner. And so therefore, if somebody, for example, it's a birthday, and say a husband, he forgets that it's his wife's birthday. God forbid that should happen. But because women can become very upset. It's like his husband is in effect saying that, you know, I don't care enough for you to even think about your birthday. So she can become very angry. And they can have big arguments. I remember even when I was just small. I was like 6 years old, 7 years old. And my parents, they would have these arguments. I would hate Sunday. Because my father was off on Sunday, and that was the day that my mother could beat up on him. I'm serious. Yeah. So, and he was very even-tempered. He never blurted back, because he knew it would be worse. Even at her best, it like the ceilings would shake. You forgot this, and why did you forget? So, the point is this, is that, of course, my father had good control, self-control. My mother did not have such control. However, as she got on in years after my father passed on, and she got into yoga, and she got into bhakti, and she did service for the deities, and she did service for the BBT, a whole different personality emerged. And she didn't get upset when things were not exactly the way she would have liked them to be. And that's because Krishna gave her what? Himself. And the more he gives of himself, it means he's giving that self-control. He's giving that upliftment. He's giving that cheerfulness. He's giving that joyfulness. And when a person has that, you're less likely to get upset or disturbed or shaken or bewildered by the events that take place in our lives. So therefore, the secret is to always try to remember Krishna as often as possible. I was mentioning in my talk last night that what I do, and I don't do it enough, and I don't always do it, but when I do it, it's amazing. Everything I try, whether I'm cooking or providing, putting together certain foodstuffs, the one thing that I do, this is for you, Lord. And put some salt, this is for you, Lord. Put a little water, this is for you. You just go on and on. It may sound like a broken record, but it's the best broken record you're ever going to find, because it brings you happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment, and bliss. This is for you, Lord. This is for you. And then you're doing something for somebody else. This is for you, Lord, so that somebody else will feel the happiness of loving you. And that's what we are here for, to inspire people, to inspire each other, to love Krishna more and more and more. Why am I talking today? What's the purpose? To simply give you some information, like encyclopedia? No, it has one purpose: to inspire devotees to want to serve Krishna more, love Krishna more, surrender to Krishna more, submit to Krishna more,
and give all to Krishna. If we do that, because if someone can feel the confidence of my convictions from my own doings, coming from Srila Prabhupada's mercy, well then others will do the same, and they will all be extremely happy. Isn't it the goal of a devotee to want to see others happy, to fulfilled and satisfied and uplifted? Of course it is. And when you see another devotee so satisfied, then it gives us happy. For example, when I do some serving out over in the prasadam, that's not just, you know, because I'm a sannyasi and trying to put on a show of humility. It has nothing to do with that. It's my saving grace. It gives me the opportunity to serve devotees, and I know Krishna likes that. Okay? He likes when we serve devotees. And Prabhupada mentions that many times. And when devotees would serve devotees, Prabhupada would comment upon that. That's very nice. Very nice that you're expressing your loving sentiments to. And of course, we have in the Nectar of Instruction, it says that we should give gifts, we should accept gifts, we should give prasadam, accept prasadam, inquire confidentially, and inquire confidentially and reveal our minds in confidence. Yes. So these are all wonderful activities which bring devotees together in a manner that connects them through the heart with Krishna, and not merely something superficial, something false, something done for show. We don't want to do that. Okay? We should do it with our whole heart, our whole being, and all our senses and all of our a mind and all of the power that Krishna has so mercifully and kindly given us. So I want to thank you all very much for listening. It's a pleasure to share this with you. And I know if you have some questions or you like some comments, please feel free to do so. And if you want to criticize me, you're welcome to do that, because right now I'm feeling too blissful to get upset. Go ahead. It's a fact. Okay, let's go. First bullet. No bullets. Yes, Prabhuji. And good. Let's get the microphone. We'll wait 1 second. That's the announcing the first question. Boom, 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 boom. We do everything with fanfare and flair in the Krishna conscious movement. Come on, let's go with the microphone. Are you making it, or are you turning it on? This should be done in advance, okay? That's what devotional service is. Nobody should be waiting here. Prabhupada has that. He mentions when you think in advance for something, this is good. When a person just has to wait, this is mode of ignorance. You see, all this time that devotees have to do, they have service to perform, and we're just waiting because we do want to satisfy the people on the internet. You got it? Doesn't look like it. Okay, well, everybody go into prayer. Hey, it's going wonderful. Please ask your question. I'm sorry to keep you waiting like
Thank
that,
you,
but
Swamiji.
It wasn't my fault.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, go ahead.
So are there, I was wondering about the demigods, like yes. How they're like kind of the managerial section of the material world. Like they're managers of the material world for Krishna. But like they can still be cursed by other beings. Like Indra was cursed to be a pig. Indra was cursed to be a pig by like another, like a Deva Rishi, I believe.
I'm not understanding what you're saying.
Indra.
Cursed by, and I missed you.
Yeah, Indra was cursed by a Deva Rishi, or like a sage, to become a pig, I remember. So are there beings more powerful than demigods?
No, and it doesn't matter. The question is not more powerful. The question really is, is the demigod acting in a way which goes against the principles that the Lord has set up, the Dharma? Okay? So if a sage has power and he's inwardly guided, a very good example of this, for example, if I can remember the names, I have a problem like that sometimes. We have that very wonderful pastime where... Yeah, Nanda Maharaj, you know, he goes out with all the cowherd men, and then there's a big, this big serpent attacks him, and all the other cowherd men are beating him, and they can't stop him, and then Krishna comes and kicks that serpent, and the serpent turns into a beautiful demigod.
So Krishna says in his own inimitable way, why are you in a serpent form? You look like a very nice demigod. So he says, what's the story behind it? So we find out from the demigod that the demigod was once, just as he is now at this point, a very beautiful demigod. What's his name? Yadava. Anybody remember? Druda, you know? The name of the demigod. Vidyadhara. Thank you so much. Thank God for the devotees. So, Vidyadhara. Vidyadhara was a very, very handsome man. He was beautiful not only to women, but to even men could see the beauty of his features, just like Krishna is a male. A male can admire the beauty of Krishna's eyes, his smile, his voice rolling like thunder, you know. So all that kind of stuff. It's right in the Bhagavatam. So everybody can enjoy, can really appreciate the beauty of Krishna's hands, Krishna's, you know, his eyes, his smile, all of these things. So, what was I talking about? I forgot. I'm sorry, you know, but I got caught up with Krishna's beauty, so you can't fault me with that. But it's a fact. It's a fact. We had, remember, in 1951, we had a Mr. America. Mr. America, do you remember Steve Reeves? That guy's face, he looked like Krishna. He was so handsome. Even men would look at it. But it doesn't mean because they looked at it. When you see something beautiful, you don't think about it from a gender point of view. You just see. It's all put together in such a beautiful way. Same with women's faces, you know, the way the nose and the eyelid. So you can't help but admire these things because they are the creations ultimately of Krishna. And Krishna is the source of all beauty. So is it any wonder that there is beauty in this world when Krishna is the source of it? Of course. Have this. So getting back to the story. So what happened was that I said Yadava. What was the first part of it? Huh? Vidyadhara. Yeah, Vidyadhara. Okay, so what happened is he explains to Krishna, of course Krishna already knows, but he's asked that question, and he said, well, I was a very handsome, truly beautiful, rugged-looking, great back, great body, good pecs, good abs, the whole bit, everything. So yeah, he says, when I walked past women, they just practically threw themselves at their feet. So I was very proud. I was very puffed up. I was very aristocratic. Oh, I thought you were going to throw something at me. I mean, the way you had that martial stance coming towards me, you got me scared. So, just take it easy on me. I'm a very dainty, not demigod either. So getting back to the point, so he asked, Krishna said, well, what caused you to be turned into a reptile? So he said, well, what happened was that once the great sage Angira, he was passing by me. Now, Angira was not very handsome, not beautiful at all, the very opposite of Vidyadhara. So because Vidyadhara was so proud of his beauty, he looked at Angira and he said, what a face. That's the way he acted. What a face. It looks like a mop or something like that. So Angira, he didn't take it personally, but he felt that this demigod needed to be addressed. He needed to be cautioned and he needed to be corrected. So that's why sometimes a person in that situation will be corrected. And there, based on your question, Angira was a sage and Vidyadhara was a demigod. But the Angira had the power to correct as an instrument of Krishna, giving this person the righteousness that he should have. So he got the fruit, and he found out it wasn't very tasty. Okay? Any other questions? Mataji, you want to make a comment? Huh?
Krishna is supreme, absolute.
Okay, you're scheduled for tomorrow's class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Okay, no, seriously. You said what I said, but I don't mind hearing it over and over again. Yeah, okay. Now we're getting late. 8:30 now. I can hear the stomachs growling. And it's at me. So is there any last quick point that I can help make? Well, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, a privilege, and a joy, especially with all these jokes that you inspired me with.